You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 210. I'm Van Burnett, joined as always by Steve Gisuelli. Steve, just in the heart of April, it's always a great time to be looking at just a handful of things under the hood. I mean, it's a little too early to get into some of the end result, like barrel rate type of stuff. But tonight we're looking at some larger denominators, right? And stuff that is meaningful earlier in the season. So we're looking at meaningful hitter changes tonight. And we've got, is this a stop sheet? Because we got a handful of cross metrics, looking at a bunch of hitters, some that are highly rostered, other ones that you might want to just be keeping out, possibly even for some buy lows or buy the dips. We're going to get into it. It's going to be a loose show, jumping in and out of names, but got a couple of great rundown lists from Steve Gisuelli, and I'm excited to get into it, man. How's it going out there?
It's good. I don't know if this is quite a stav sheet. I don't have nice formatting, you know. And
it's a lighter
we've
pull,
had Ryan yeah. Bloomfield on the show, and he's guiding me through it, the inspiration for that. But it, I mean, it's our personal stav sheet that's spreading inspiring this episode and giving us all the data. Yeah, and this is like a yearly tradition for us. It's kind of an early April show where, you know, everyone's excited and posts Savant sliders, and you know, us too. We are super excited with Jordan Walker and how his Savant sliders are bright red. But like Scott Chu of Pitcher List and Hacks and Jacks always says, like, these are major league hitters. Like, pretty much any single guy in the major league can have a 14-day stretch like this, which is why those Savant sliders maybe. While there is some signal in there, there is also a lot of noise. So we try to look at this point of the year, something that is more meaningful early. And like you hinted at in the open there, a rule of thumb there is things with larger denominator, where the denominator is pitches. That stabilizes a lot quickly, because if you think about it, there's only 30 to 40 or so balls in play for most guys. That's why there can be a lot of noise in that. You know, if you have 8 barrels and 40 balls in play, you're going to have an amazing barrel rate. That's going to even out over time, and why we like to look at larger samples for batted ball events. But things like pitches, like swing strike rate, where the denominator is the number of pitches that you see and the numerator is the number of swings and misses that you have, that swinging strike, it's a lot more reasonable or meaningful at this time of year, because the sample is greater. I mean, if you're swinging and missing less over a larger number of pitches, you could tell that early. Same with chase rate, right? The denominator there is like pitches outside of the zone. So still not quite as meaningful as even swing strike rate, but the denominator is pitches outside of the zone. There's a lot of them, a lot more than 50 that you would see, or 40 that you would see for batted balls events. So that's just a rule of thumb, and we look at a lot of stats and like that. And I think a powerful way to derive hitter changes is to combine those things. So who's chasing less and swinging and missing less? Who's swinging harder, where the for bat speed, where the meaningful metric there is number of swings. There's a lot of those, so that stabilizes quickly. And also swinging and missing more. So who's gained bat speed without sacrificing contact? Those kinds
swing
of things.
Swing and missing less.
Exactly.
Yeah,
or
yeah,
swing and missing
yeah.
less without sacrificing contact. Those are the types of things that you look at and have more signal 12, 14 games into the season, wherever we're at, than things that we tend to get excited about. And, you know, with the new algorithm on Twitter and just how things are presented now, it's even more, you can get away with things that you shouldn't get away with and get dunked on for posting Savant sliders, things like that, early on. Like, it just, you know, I don't know, you see all these, I don't want to get into it, but you see all these accounts that are all just owned by these gambling companies that are posting these things that, you know, do this for engagement without necessarily caring whether it's meaningful or not. But that's a whole other rant for a whole other podcast. I digress. But long story short, let's look at some metrics that mean stuff for hitters and potentially find some early buy lows, or things where maybe the surface stats haven't caught up to the player and they're doing things under the hood that present an ad opportunity, buy opportunity, whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So the combo, like Steve said, we've kind of broken the show up into two lists. The first one is around more or less plate discipline with O swing and swinging strike rate. So less chase and also more contact. And then the second list that we'll get to probably after an ad break is, like Steve said, rolling in the bat speed gains as well as the swinging strike rate improving. So less swing and miss, more power. So I think for to oversimplify, because there's a lot of ways that this could factor in, but primarily if you're looking at less chase and more contact, what I'm looking at with the surface stats next to it tends to be batting average. And I think on top of that is also strikeout rate. And the two things are correlated. But the idea is if you
OBP,
see...
OBP, right? In OBP leagues.
OBP, is, yeah. That's another great one. And if you see a guy who their surface metrics match up with this, I think it's a positive sign, you know, that maybe that's for good reason. It, again, is small sample. But then on the flip side is predicting the ones that might turn around. And that's where there might be a little bit of an edge, so to speak. I mean, already early in the season, Steve, some of the shows that we've had where it was felt a little bit like blind faith on some of these predictions. I know we've texted each other offline that it's like, you know, we talked about Cam Smith's bat speed improving when he was like hitless on the season. And then he rattles off three homers. I know that he's a streaky player by nature, but some of this stuff, it's pretty much the best feeling in fantasy when you can go off of process stats, not back of the baseball card, and then some of the real results kind of catch up, right? So it's like that's the fun of this.
Yeah,
this
like show. I saw Eric Smolski put out a tweet about Trent Grisham yesterday morning. We're recording this on Tuesday night, so Monday morning, about how, you know, he's been off to a chilly start, but all of the underlying metrics as far as hard hit rate, his swing strike rate, all of that looked good. And he had two home runs that night on Monday night. Like, that's got to be, you know, for someone
well.
That produces content, like that's like adding a streamer off the wire and them hitting two bombs for you in a sense. So, yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. Like, for guys that we have an established baseline, if they're doing this, like, it could mean sort of career year.
It's real.
In a sense.
Yeah, it's real. Yeah. Well, let's jump into the list. So again, on this first one, O-swing and swing strike rate. The first one on the list is Kyle Schwarber. And Schwarber is one that you'd have to pry away from a manager right now because he's pretty much picking up where he left off. And man, six homers in just over 2 weeks here. And you kind of look at Schwarber after the year he had last year with the 56 bombs. I remember we had a debate late last season, Steve, about like how high does Schwarber go? Is it like, you know, the 8 to 10 range? I think I was like higher, and then you were like, let's calm down. And he ended up settling in the early mid of the second round. But this is intriguing because he made some gains last year where he was also in our April show. And now it looks like while the swing and miss stuff is still well below league average, because that's the kind of the profile for Schwarber, you kind of wonder, is there where we saw a 240 year last year and a 248 the year before? And people are like, yeah, but could he, you know, could he go right back to when, I mean, it was 3 years ago that he hit 197. I think some of this is encouraging that Schwarber's kind of evolving in a really good way at age 33. But yeah, what were you going to add, Steve?
I think this puts to bed that 197 year. Like, that's not going to happen. I mean, the funny thing is he's striking out 34% of the time. That's the highest of his career.
That's true.
So that is, you know, something to keep in mind. But that being said, you know, it's the highest contact rate that he's had since 2022. Like, it's the best chase rate that he's had ever. So I think a lot of that maybe is just, and it's the best swing strike rate that he's ever had. So yeah, it's above leave average, and the strikeout rate is concerning, but I think that's more noise than signal. Like, that's something where you look at the strikeout rate and be like, whoa, like, what's going on here? Is this like a BABIP inflated run or anything like that? No, I think that's telling you that the 236 that he's hitting right now kind of is the floor. And the fact that he's still hitting the ball as hard as he does,
because he's striking out so much.
Rate, like,
yeah. I mean, the guy's got as many homers as he does non-homer hits.
Yeah. Yeah. What I think here is that we could potentially see like a 250 season like we saw back in 2024 with similar power. And you're looking at, like, you know, the 2021 when he was, you know, at 928 OPS at 266 with, that was only 32 homers. Like, this could be kind of a best of both worlds. Honestly, like, I think this could be a career year for Schwarber. That's coming off a year where he hit 56 homers last year. But
can I pop in? I don't say that with lightly. When you say career year as well, I know it's not the typical run of the show, so we won't linger too long.
Sure. But
he's at 346. If he pops another like 50 homer year and he's flirting at 400, are age 33 on that Cubs team, like, is Schwarber the one that could make the Hall? I know it's a different, it's like the Hall of Good.
Yeah.
But it is interesting how he's amassed. I mean, if he keeps it up and like just DHs his way in the late 30s, like he might eclipse.
It hurts that he's not. He's essentially a DH, right? And when he played the field, he's not good at it. You know, the fact that he's a career 231 hitter, I know batting averages and everything, but I think that does carry some weight in Hall of Fame context. Does have a World Series? Was he part of that World Series team? I don't think he played, or did he came back for the playoffs, right?
Yeah, he was a rookie. Yeah. The only 500 homer hitters not in the Hall are
steroid guys. Assume steroid guys.
He might raise.
He would have to get the 500. He would have to get the 500, and even then, I think it would be tough just because of the DH and lack of batting average, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's only needs three more seasons to get to.
Well, if he stays at this rate,
it's an if. So that's Schwarber. Fun convo there at the end. But moving to the next one. Oh, I guess should we flag that his actual rate? So he was the highest one, right, of this list, or not quite the highest, but Schwarber had a 12.8% swing strike rate last year, and it's down to a 10.8.
Yes, I kind of sorted this by like league relevance, so like guys that won't be available to the most near the bottom. Available. Yeah,
perfect. Okay, and then the O swing for Schwarber dropped 5% as well, so some nice early gains.
Both career best rates for him, even though yes, they're not relative good to the league. They're not great, but for Schwarber, you know what happens if he swings and misses only 10% of the time. You know, that could mean trouble for the rest of the league.
He goes to Cooperstown, Steve. No. All right, the next one, man, there's no easy way to do this segue because Bryce Terang was on my fade list for the chalkboard, and Cody Ponce, granted that's completely different, was on my target list. So, yeah, the early odds.
You kind of got Steve two L's too, already there,
right. I mean, it's already back. So, Bryce Terang, red hot to start the year, a 292 average. Which, if you'll remember, last year his 288 was up 35 points from the year before. So I know the swing speed had gone up, and Terang's looking pretty legit. The power with it, although it's just three homers, the 1037 OPS, he's running five steals. But for the purpose of this, kind of meaningful stats, not back of the baseball card, the swinging strike rate has lowered from 8.5%, which is already good, down to 5.9%. and the O swing from 28%, which was higher than Schwarber's in terms of chase, down to 20%. So pretty major drop there. Yeah. One of the bigger ones of any of the names we'll be talking about there. So Bryce Tarang, age 26, I mean, it's looking like at second base, he's just emerging as the option here, right, Steve?
Yeah, this looks like it's just like compounding on the breakout. You know, you could kind of nitpick last year. You know, he struck out 23% of the time after he was, you know, 17% and 21% his rookie year. Like, you know, what's going on there? Like, is that going to impact his ability to get on base and you know, limit the thing that you want him to do the most, steal bases, and the fact that he only stole 24 last year? It looks like, you know, when we talk in the offseason of kind of smushing years together and smushing players together and trying to wish cast on players doing, you know, the thing that they did best one year with the thing that they did best in the other year, I think we kind of get carried away with that a little bit sometimes. It's a lot harder. It's a lot easier said than done, but it looks like Tarang kind of is doing that in the early going, especially considering he has the three homers already. That's, you know, pacing for, you know, close to the 20, 25 homers that maybe you would have thought in the top end of his projection. He's got five steals already. That's encouraging considering he only stole 24 last time and was caught eight times. He's only been caught once. The batting average is there. The barrel rate is improved. The hard hit rate is in line with last year. You know, I know I talked about a lot of things that this show isn't about, but this sort of the fact that he is swinging and missing less and chasing less while continuing to do the things that made him break out last year makes me think that, like, okay, Bryce Tarang is evolving into a fantasy star.
Yeah, it does. It really does look like that. And yeah, we saw, I mean, part of the concern I had originally was just like the low barrel rate. His a lot of his power production last year came kind of crammed into 1 month. And it was like, well, what if that was just the heater? But pretty convincing when it's just rolling over and the plate discipline underneath is looking good. And I believe, oh, maybe he's not. So his... Is his bat? He's not on the bat speed list, but did it,
no,
has his bat speed gone?
I could check his bat speed real quick.
It has gone up, yeah. From 70.
So there you go. Yeah, it probably. I think I had a 1 mile an hour like filter, like, you know, that was my threshold. So he was at 70.6 last year. He's at 70.7, so it went up a little bit. It's essentially the same. Yeah,
but yeah, even so, I mean, it's we're seeing a very encouraging start for Bryce Tarang. Jumping to Riley Green, this is an interesting one, Steve, because, you know, probably the first name that has been disappointing so far in terms of back of the baseball card, 682 OPS, 238 batting average, and just one homer after last year when he jacked 36. And we kind of talked about, okay, is Riley Green doing a trade-off that we can live with? Because his plate discipline looked a lot worse last year than in 24, but he added some power production. So this year, you know, I'm going to find it on the show, I guess, because it's hard for me to say. I think in the offseason we were saying, yeah, maybe you'll take that trade-off if Riley Green is just going to be an out-and-out, like, 35-plus guy. But here he is reducing his swinging strike rate. His O-swing has gone way, way down. So it seems like, at the young age for Riley Green, age 25, we've talked ad nauseum on this show about how Riley Green is just like a good hitter. Like last year kind of surprised us that he turned into such a hacker and compounded the poor plate skills. Now it looks like a pretty intentional change. So it goes back to the Tarang theory of like, can you just smush the two things together? Like give us the pop from last year, but with the good plate discipline. The question is if it's that straightforward. Talk to me about Riley Green, Steve. It's a guy you've been a fan of, and he seems a little bit of a puzzle at the moment.
I think I take this trade-off. Like, the bat speed is still there. Yeah, the barrel and hard hit aren't what they were last year, where the barrel rate was, you know, 95th percentile. The hard hit actually was, you know, good, 61st percentile. This year it's 78th at 49%. The barrel rate's still really good at 13.3%. So, you know, the fact that the bat speed's still there, the barrel rate's still there, and he's making some of those plate discipline gains that we sort of wishcasted 2 years ago, I think is encouraging. Like, there's stretches, like especially last year, like I think Riley Green had, like, you know, close to 30 home runs by mid-July, end of July, and then kind of cooled off, right? So he has that in him to go on home run stretch. Like, I'm not worried about Riley Green's game power. Like, I think that's going to be there. What has me intrigued is if he could sort of put together a year where, like, he hit 260 and, you know, have 30 plus homers. Like, that's what I was sort of hoping for with sort of the, you know, Freddie Freeman light comparison from a few years ago.
Yeah.
Obviously there's much more swing and miss in his game, but that's, I think, kind of what Riley Green can be in his peak. And the fact that there are some changes under the hood in the chase rate, in the swing strike rate, in the right direction, makes me more comfortable, or, you know, wanting to have him, honestly, more than even like last year when there was such swing and miss in his game. And maybe that 258 was elevated by a bit of BABIP. And there was, you know, a lot of swings in his season as far as production goes in the months that he was productive and the months that he was really kind of useless. Maybe there could be more steady production. And, you know, I'm not worried about power with Riley Green. Like, he has it. He has the bat speed. He's still demonstrating that this year. That's going to come. I'm more encouraged than anything with these gains. And honestly, the fact that he has only 682 OPS, like, I think this is a buy low opportunity. Yeah, he's going to struggle versus lefties, and they bump him down in the lineup versus lefties. But Detroit does have a lot of platoon bats, you know, in Kerry Carpenter and someone else that we're talking about a little bit later in the show as a teaser there has made a lot of gains under the hood that really only plays versus righties. He still plays versus lefties. That's the point. And I also know that the Tigers saw their first lefty today on April 14th, this far into the season. So it's been a while. There'll be more lefties that they see, but he still plays. That's the encouraging part.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I agree. It's overall he's just 25 years old. So I think there's a lot of time for just fine tuning approach at the plate. And like you said, Steve, last year, the 258, basically he wasn't being drafted at what he did last year because a lot of people were like, oh, the well, Riley half, Green. Yeah. Is, yeah, exactly. He came back down to earth and the expected batting average was like 20 points lower than where he was at. And this year we're looking at that flipped more or less, and the plate discipline supports it. And like you said, there was no trade-off or is no trade-off so far on bat speed, hard hit data. So yeah, I think Riley Green is the first buy low that we're talking about here. Keeping it rolling, Luis Robert was a name that we were interested to see what the new scenery would do for him out in New York. Not as young as Riley Green, but still very much untapped potential. It feels like we saw flashes and kind of like post breakout bounce back candidate. And Robert, for me and Steve, you know, my home league settings, like, it punishes poor plate discipline. So Robert for quite a long time has been like, all right, if you're really desperate for some speed or some power speed. But this year, to see how substantial his improvements have been on chase rate, whiff rate, O swing here has gone from 35.8%, which for context is 10% higher than Schwarber. And the highest one of the show so far, dropped down to 28.8%, still the highest name of the ones we're talking about here, but major improvements. And the swing strike rate from 15.7, which is like three ticks above league average, to 9.6, which is better than league average. Now we're seeing Luis Robert start to add some much needed plate discipline to go with what we've always known as some dangerous tools with the power speed combo. even last year in kind of a dumpster fire year, I know it's like a little bit better, but 14 homers, 33 steals. Like if you compare that with a better hit tool, so he's not living around the Mendoza line, really interesting breakout case for Robert. And he's already hitting 280, which again, we're talking about 14 hits, so it's not a big sample, but you can read into it a little bit more when you're seeing those that many gains. So I'd imagine you're pretty excited about Luis Robert, Steve. I think you were higher on him than I was coming into the offseason, but what are your thoughts here?
Yeah, this is encouraging. Honestly, maybe my – I don't know. Can you buy low on him? Probably not. It's New York. He has good surface numbers, and I think everyone's pretty well-versed on these changes. But, yeah, massive – I mean, a 15.7% swinger strike rate to 9.6 is really, really good. Getting on base this much. I know he really hasn't run as much as you like considering he's been on base 42% of the time with a 420 on base percentage and only has those two steals to mention. You know, maybe it's a team context type of thing, but I mean with the way Soto ran last year, like you'd imagine that.
Yeah.
And the Mets offense has been so bad to start the season that they're going to have to start generating runs otherwise. And this is another type of thing, like the bat speed's in line. Yeah, the barrel rate is a little bit suppressed, but again, that's why we don't necessarily want to look at that this early in the season, because a three barrel night is going to change that drastically. And Luis Robert is the kind of guy that can do that. So,
yeah, we're two shows away.
Yeah, exactly. Like yeah. Let's get to the end of April. And, you know, there's a little bit more ground balls than you would like. He's not pulling the ball much. So maybe this approach is sapping into some of that as well, which, you know, could be a balance. But honestly, like, I would take 280 Robert with 18 homers and the fact that he could steal 30, 40 bases. Rather than like what he did the last 2 years where he hit close to 220, like the batting average is going to go up, considering that he's doing this less and how hard he hits the ball, historically.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like it's all fastballs. Last year, the 26% whiff rate on fastballs, he hit 223 against the heaters. This year he's hitting 290 and a 13%. So he cut his whiff rate on fastballs in half, which is aiding toward the bigger gains we're talking about here. Shifting over to Taylor Ward, this is another one that new environment, interesting with the Orioles, that he's starting out with the 338 batting average, yet to hit a homer after hitting 36 last year. But we saw last year is like the worst strikeout rate that he's had of his career, I believe. He was never really like pegged as somebody who was just all swing and miss. And last year it was looking to go that direction with a 26% strikeout rate. This year, so far, that's down to 22% and the plate skills beneath it. The swing strike rate, unlike Robert, was already not terrible, but it's gotten even better, dropping from 8 and change down to below 6%. And then the O swing from 23% down to 15 and change. So really good gains here for Taylor Ward. And I think when you look at the batting average so far, Steve, and just a guy who did hit 36 homers last year, 25 the year before, early in his career, like that renaissance year for Taylor Ward, when everybody was like wondering, you know, who's Mike Trout? His teammates going off. he hit 281 with 23 homers. And then it felt like everybody was kind of chasing that, but he's lived in like a 250 or sub 250 in recent years. And now he's off to a red hot start, 338. Obviously that's not real, but do you think we could see like a 270, 275 season for Taylor Ward? Because I don't know. It seems like we weren't really that in on the guy in draft season. Now it looks like we might be seeing a little breakout.
Here's sort of a flip side that maybe I should have added for context. Taylor Ward is only swinging at 50% of the pitches inside the zone. So he is just not swinging at all. What does, I think, mitigate that a little bit is that his contact rate is up. It's at 81% after being at 76% in 2024, 78 in 2023. So that's good. He's making more contact overall. You see that in the dip in swing strike rate. But, you know, the fact that he's basically just up there not swinging is going to sort of leave me as this one, like, sort of TBD. You know, I'm not surprised that he doesn't have a homer, right? Because he just hasn't taken that many swings, right? But, you know, it is encouraging that he's hitting and, you know, in the lineup every day and has made some of those gains, right? I mean, he also has a 0% barrel rate. He hasn't barreled a ball, let alone hit a homer, and his hard hit rate is completely dropped. So this
he
is more
have,
like...
He does have three doubles right at the wall. I'm wondering how those were barrels, but maybe they were just on the ground, like liners that hit a gap or something.
Yeah, or just hit at had a weird angle or, like, you know, just below 95 miles an hour, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, right? Like, a lot of times we talk about when a guy goes to a new team and they press and chase, and you see that manifest itself. Like, we saw that with Lindor. We saw that with – or we saw Lindor, like, be completely passive and wait for the right pitch. We saw Trey Turner struggle that first half in Philadelphia after he signed that big deal and have a, you know, highly elevated chase rate. But, you know, maybe when a team was Taylor Ward a trade? Yeah, he was traded for Grayson Rodriguez. Maybe there's something that Baltimore identified that they want him to do and wait for his pitch. And maybe he just hasn't gotten too many of them just yet. That's why he hasn't swung and swung that much inside the zone. But I'm more curious than, like, oh, you got to go to Taylor Ward in this situation. But the fact that he had 36 homers, you know, if he can do the year smashing thing and mix it together, the 36 homers from last year, the improved plate discipline, maybe when he starts swinging a bit more, you could get like a 250, 30 homer season, which would be a lot more valuable than what he was last year at 220 and the 37 homers.
Yep. Okay. Well, we'll do one more from this list, and we got to get to our next list as well, because it's even more fun layering in the bat speed for kind of the power upside with plate discipline. But we're going to take our first ad break. We'll be right back after this. All right, so Steve, I just in the nature of time, because we can't help ourselves breaking these guys down, the last three all are interesting in their own right. Willie Adames, who has his kind of best plate discipline early on of his entire career, who seems like his strikeout rate had consistently been going in the wrong direction. We got Matt McClain, who is like the conundrum of the spring training breakout. Now he's ice cold. In certain like 12-14 team leagues, people are moving on and dropping him, yet he is on this list for having some really good plate skills. And then Miguel Vargas is one that is maybe one of the original WAF favorites when we started the show, at least in terms of prospects. And he pops up on this list as well after showing some signs of life last year. But Vargas is definitely a buy low, just hitting 170. Of these three names, which one would you want to kind of jump in on that you find most interesting?
I think it's probably the most controversial, but I think it's Matt McClain. Like, I'm still encouraged by him. And
there's probably the most opportunity.
Yeah, I don't have that many shares of him. I only have one, I think, and it's just because there was so much hype with how good his spring was. But, you know, I think that it looks a lot more like his 2023 season, where there wasn't a bright, bright red Statcast page. It was, you know, good chase, hit the ball at the right angle. His launch angle sweet spot was elite. That's not there yet, but there's no chase. There's less swing and miss than there has been in his two prior seasons that he's played in 2025 and 2023. And the barrel rate's still good at 9.1%. Yeah, the hard hit rate won't come, but again, like, these sort of things can change in one game here. The fact that he's making more contact, plays his home games in Cincinnati, like, let it warm up a little bit. Let them get in the groove. Like, I think it's coming for Matt McClain, and I would be jumping all over anyone that's sort of over this sluggish start and expected him to hit the ground running with how he had that spring training. Earlier, a few weeks ago. Like, I would still feel the same way I did about him if I drafted him in March.
Yeah, and I don't think many are feeling that way because there's just a lot of frustration. Still rostered 61% of Yahoo leagues, but that was 65% a few days ago. So like the trend is starting it's one to watch close. And it's another one that the guy's 26 years old. So still kind of in that Riley Green type of age range where like, McLean was early on the scene and kind of had some loud production in 23. So it feels like he's been around longer, but like wouldn't be shocking if his spring training would have carried over. And now it's almost like you're just, the price is correcting in a sense. So yeah, I like that one, Steve. I think it's the right name to.
What about you of the last two, Adames, Vargas? I'm kind of interested in Vargas. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, he seems like one that's kind of deeper, like, a corner infield or something for 15-team context. Another guy who's super young. I know he's kind of built us up to let us down in the past, but just 26 years old, really good plate skills. And he made some improvements last year. It was the first time we saw, like, signs of life where the barrel rate was, you know, kind of at league average. Before that, it was on the floor. And what we always liked about Vargas was the fit for him being like an OBP points league type of threat because there was good plate skills there. So we're seeing that here. And then, it looks like he hasn't lost the barrel rate yet or the bat speed. In fact, the bat speed, I know that's probably the segue, right, to the next list where we layer that in. But last year, the bat speed for Miguel Vargas was 25th percentile. This year, up to 54th percentile. Yeah. So pretty major jump there. And then you layer in the improved plate discipline. I think Vargas is interesting. And hitting 170 out of the gate, he's probably available in a lot of like your standard home league. So, yeah, I'm interested in that one. Any thoughts here, Steve? We'll call him the first name of the next list.
Yeah, no, I like Miguel Vargas. Like, I think there's room for improvement for what he did last year. Sure, maybe it'll never be above 250, but if he can come close to that with the amount that he gets on base, the fact that he has three stolen bases, you know, he hit 16 homers in the 569 plate appearances last year. There's no reason why I don't think he can do that again. Maybe come close to 20 with that added bat speed. So I think Miguel Vargas, I know his numbers looked a lot better like three or four games ago, and he's just thrown up a couple offers, but I think there could be some value for him there in that Chicago lineup.
Yeah, I was surprised to see the 170 average because I know he was like kind of a trendy name in the first week or so. But one thing to just flag on Vargas is kind of easy to write him off, but last year was the first year he's played more than 81 games in the five seasons that Vargas has been up. And there's a reason we were like super excited during his promotion. Like, where was his, let's see, in 2021, which feels like ages ago.
Yeah.
But when he was a prospect, prospect, hit 320 and was pretty much grading out to be like a 30-15 guy. Obviously, that is 6 years ago, so we've seen more. But my point is, until the last season where he had 138 games, we hadn't seen like an extended run for Vargas in years. And last year, to your point, Steve, he was pretty passable with like the 16 homers, 717 OPS. So yeah, he's like a deep name that I think is worth keep it on the watch list and definitely not giving up and writing him off long term yet. So yeah, Vargas is a good name there. Let's go to the top of the board though. Like you said, in terms of fantasy relevance, Freddie Freeman.
And these are guys that have had bat speed gains and improved their swing strike rate.
Yes. So Freddie Freeman, who is off to a nice start here. I mean, you looked at last year, and of course I roll my eyes because in my custom home league, he tracks out so well. I picked him like sixth overall last year, and it was a career down year more or less, but at least until he picked it up in September. But last year his bat speed was 20th percentile. This year it's up 34th percentile. Of course, he's 36 years old. But to see that that's happening while plate discipline is holding, The swing strike rate for a guy like Freddie Freeman, you already count on him to have good plate discipline, 13% down to 8%. So really, really good stuff for Freddie. What do you think here, Steve? Just pretty much a false fade for that we kind of wrote off. It's like, well, he's getting old.
Yeah, and he had that heel injury, like, from, you know, that run in the playoffs where he was essentially, you know, the best player in the league in when Aaron Judge was still alive, right? Like, he was that good on that run, and he was on one leg, and he was essentially on one leg all of last year. I rostered Freeman a lot last year too, and I watched a lot of Dodgers games. Like, whenever he had a double, like, he was turning around the corner slowly, like, like he had to hit the ball completely in the gap, like, for no outfielder to be around him to hit doubles. And he had a ton of doubles last year too. That's just how good of a hitter he was. He was essentially just doing it on one leg. Like, this is now Freddie Freeman back to as healthy as he can be as a 36-year-old. Like, this is going to be your prototypical, you know, 880, 24 homers, 300 average season for Freddie Freeman that you know, we come to know and love. And then, funny enough, that's kind of what his line was last year when he was hurt.
I think the reason we think of that is, so last year in August, he had a 993 OPS.
Yeah.
And September had an 843.
So it's a continuation of that. Yeah.
It really is. Yeah. The first 4 months of the year for Freddie is where we're like, really, man, we're on like nine homers and it's end of July. And then he kind of went nuclear, which in a roto league is great, but it was a little frustrating for like head to head weeklies. So that's Freddie Freeman. Man, what a treat to get to talk about Mike Trout here, Steve. Guy that was on your chalkboard last year. It feels like every time my phone is buzzing, it's for a Trout homer. I think he hit his sixth tonight.
Yep.
Is that right? Yep. When you look at this list here, you know, you're at age 34, a guy who's dealt with as much as he has. We're seeing the bat speed climb up from what was already 77th percentile up to 86th percentile. And then you've got the swing strike rate from 10.5 down to 5.5. So like, this is just vintage Trout, like what you want to see. If you're a manager that took a gamble, forget the 230, 240 batting average, like, you're patting yourself on the back here because he's had some loud production. And where's the ceiling, Steve? Like, what could we see from Trout?
Yeah, it's funny. Like, the average is still low and the strikeout rate is still not great, or, you know, a lot better, but not like elite that we know Trout can be. It's maybe something else that could have paired this, or we could do this on future shows, is like sprint speed too. Like, his sprint speed is at 91st percentile, 28.6. Like, that's vintage Trout. Like, he hit like a 30 in spring training. That's kind of why there was some hype around him, like, back in center field, like, looks fully healthy. Yeah, and there's always that with Trout. Like, you know, 2 years ago he had that amazing April and then it all fell apart. Last year there was an IL stint and surrounded by, you know, elevated strikeout rates and suppressed batting average. I'm more encouraged that we could see sort of a gracefully declining year that we've been yearning for Trout, where it's like 250, 35 to 40 homers, and good counting stats if he plays a full season. And all of these metrics sort of indicate that that's what we could sort of pace for. Yeah, there's a little bit of a decline in the sweet spot percentage and hard hit percentage, but I'd honestly take that. With how, you know, I'm not worried about Trout. When he squares up a ball, he's going to hit a home run. So I'm not necessarily worried about like a dip in hard hit rate or anything like that. And again, it's super, super early for that sort of stuff. So, it's encouraging. And it looks like I was a year early on the Trout rebound.
Yeah. But I think if you're going to hold on to something from last year, it said we did see 130 games. So he stayed on the field, and now it's again, we're playing the smush the two seasons together type of thing. But if we're getting the plate discipline with the pop and we get the health, it looks like we could have the best season for Trout since 2022 is what that would end up being when he had 40 homers and a .283 batting average. So, yeah, I like what you said, Steve. It would be good for the soul as well to see him have like a plus .250 season where he's just like a good hitter on top of everything else. So, yeah, there's Trout. Matt McClain pops up on this list. We talked about him before, but just noting that the bat speed has gone up. Brian Reynolds is another one. Man, we're just going through my home league team from last year. If you could tell, I didn't barely miss the playoffs. But Reynolds looks like he's back to not only that steady Eddie that we came to expect of, you know, low 20s homers, non-zero speed, and seemed like 270 and change every single year. The difference is this year he has upped the bat speed from what was 72.2 up to 73.2, which I know those seem like small ticks, but it is substantial with that small of a range from last year that was 50th percentile up to 65th this year. So Brian Reynolds, I mean, those who bought the dip and kind of thought at just 31, he's still the same guy that he's been. Looks like we're probably going to see a bounce back and maybe then some. He's got three homers so far, .290 average, .859 OPS. Thoughts on Reynolds, Steve?
I mean, the Pirates offense looks good too. And like Connor Griffin isn't even hitting yet. I know O'Neill Cruz has been on an unreal heater. Speaking of guys that I rostered a year early. but you know, he's already got a steal. Like I could see Reynolds having a season similar to what he did in 2024, where he was a really useful player with 24 homers, 10 steals, .275. Maybe he's running a bit hot now and has a bit of an elevated BABIP, especially with, you know, the strikeout rate that is elevated and higher than what he's been in the past, as far as peak Brian Reynolds. But I don't think we're necessarily expecting peak Brian Reynolds here. They're still a useful fantasy player if he is close to what he was 2 years ago, and that looks like what he sort of is trending to be this year.
Yep. Good call on the Pirates offense. Hey, shout out to O'Neill Cruz mashing lefties.
Yeah,
things we didn't think we'd say on April 14th. Moving along, Steve, I'm gonna cherry pick because Miguel Vargas pops up in this list. We could talk about PCA, but he's kind of like gone from dismal to a little bit better, and we know that he's kind of young athlete, swings hard. Who I want to talk about selfishly is Francisco Lindor, because I'm sitting here suffering with the .541 OPS, .176 batting average. Talk to me. I know he's historically a slow starter. He had the hamate bone injury. What is there reason to be excited here for Lindor, big picture?
I think so. You know, Lindor is sort of a rule of thumb guy. Like, you kind of just put these guys that have this track record out of sight, out of mind when they're off to a slow start in April, especially when it comes to Lindor, who is notoriously a slow starter, like you said. But, you know, a 1.3 mile an hour gain in bat speed is in the upper half of this list that I created as far as like actual, you know, improvement in terms of mile an hour. And then the swing strike rate going from an already really good 9% to a lower 8.8%. I know that's not much, but, you know, you're taking sort of anything that you can look for with Lindor. And like, you know, there's just things that he does well. He's doing them better despite these results. I would have absolutely no qualms trading for Lindor. Like, how many times is he going to have to come out to a slow start in April for everyone to sort of just realize that this is just what he does? And you're going to look up at the end of the year, you're going to see 30 homers, you're going to see 30 steals, you're going to see .265 and, you know, an .815 OPS. Like, what Lindor does. That's what he's doing. I am not concerned really about it at all. It's a better walk rate than usual. The barrel rate's in line. Yeah, the hard hit rates is a little bit low, but yeah, give it time.
Early.
Give it time.
Yeah, I think a good like kind of benchmark for the purpose of this show to summarize is the bat speed for Lindor so far this year is at 72.4 miles per hour. That's 56th percentile. Last year, it was down a tick and a half at 30th percentile. the year before in 2024, he had the same bat speed as this year. So in that season, he had a 90th percentile barrel rate. And last year, just for context, a 50th percentile barrel rate. So this year, when the barrel rate looks like 50th percentile, it's too early to read into that. You might see a barrel rate from Lindor closer to 2 years ago where everything looked bright red, whereas last year where it didn't. Now, results were results, and like you said, Steve, it kind of all came out in the wash, 33 versus 31 homers. But I think the idea is if he can hold the bat speed with him just being who he is as a hitter and age 32 and, you know, proven track record, I think we're going to see him surge here, which is the hope for me personally. But yeah, it just shows that those small of bat speed changes can make a big, big difference on the way it impacts the ball and barrels and all that good stuff. All right, we're going to get to a last handful of names, but we are going to take our second ad break and we'll be right back after this. Okay, so Steve, we still got some heavy hitters up here. Junior Caminero, guy who I'm going to get to see at the Trop next week, checking off a new stadium. Jackson Merrill, guy that we've talked about a few times already this season. Caminero has gone from being the highest bat speed on this list to being even more so the highest on this list.
Yeah.
And it's not an insignificant jump either at 1.5 miles per hour. Is there a point of diminishing returns where, like, you know, it's like the difference between driving a car 110 miles per hour and going 115? Or, like, where are we at with Caminero, who's had an okay but slightly disappointing start, which I think we definitely saw last year.
Yeah.
So just curious, do you think this just doubles down that the 45 homer pop last year was far from a fluke?
I mean, not when you know you make as much contact as he does, swinging as hard as he does, and just don't strike out. Like, he sort of gets around that by being aggressive and making contacts, and while having a swing strike rate that would imply like a 25% strikeout rate. Like, he's only been at 20% for his career. That's what makes him so special, and he's still at that. The fact is, like, he's just not getting any pitches to hit. He has a 13.4% walk rate. And if you watch a Rays game, like, nobody is throwing Junior Caminero like anything. Like, I don't have the stats in front of me, but I wouldn't be surprised if he has like some of the fewest the lowest meatball percentage, or I'll see what it is. I don't think they have like league averages up there. But you could see that on Savant, where you could see how many meatballs, so like just pitches right in the middle of the zone. He's at 5.2%, where last year he was at 7.2%. So he's seeing 2% less. And just in the zone, like, he had a 49% zone percentage last year. So half the time he was seeing a strike, that's down to 41%. So nobody is throwing him strikes this season. It's just something that, the league has got smart to. The Rays lineup is kind of weak around him. But, I mean, you're going to have to pitch to Caminero eventually, and there's going to be heaters, and he's going to get his 35 home runs with the amount of power that he has. It's just absolutely crazy what he does. I mean, and that's also, like how many bad ball events does he have? He has 44, so more than I thought. I guess that's because he doesn't strike out that much. But if anything, like, yeah, buy low, but I don't think anyone's like, gonna think that's a thing that's possible.
Yeah, and the max exit velocity is already higher than it was last year, which is in line with seeing the bat speed jump. So, yep, all systems go for Caminero as soon as pitchers start going at him. Jackson Merrill, on the other hand, is not in an elite bat swing or bat speed, so to speak, but he's seen an important tick up from 72 to 73.2, getting up there. I mean, I say not elite, but definitely like closer to what we saw 2 years ago from Merrill, where there's a lot of room for upside. And the plate discipline, which was already good, has kind of held, right? There's nothing major that's changed there. So that's Jackson Merrill. We've talked about him a couple times. The one I was interested in, Steve, is revisiting Colt Keith, because it's a name you brought up on a past show, I think week before last. Colt Keith has yet to hit a homer, but a .333 batting average, and the bat speed is up from last year at 27th percentile all the way up to 61st. A lot of like the hard hit, batted ball stuff looks really good for a big prospect, 24-year-old. What do we think on Colt Keith here, knowing that the batting average is up, but the fact that he's had no homers, it's like there's a lot of production to tap into that we have yet to see.
Real quick on Merrill, this is just telling me that he's healthy. It's really encouraging. Like, he's has three steals already. The bat speed is higher than it's even was, I think, when he did have that really good rookie year. Yeah, there's a little more swing and miss, but he's also a guy that just doesn't strike out that much despite that, by, you know, being aggressive. You know, despite that much swing and miss in the game, it's still just a 16.4% strikeout rate this season. Already has the three homers. Yeah, the overall line doesn't look great. I think that's a buying opportunity on anything. Again, this is just telling me that he's healthy. The sprint speed is there. Defense is there. So, yeah, Merrill looks good. As far as Colt Keith, like, yeah, all of this is encouraging. I think it's also sort of a Kerry Carpenter, Detroit Tiger lefty kind of thing. Like, they saw his first
sit today.
Yeah, they saw their first lefty today, and he sat. So did Kerry Carpenter. So
at least McGonagall didn't.
Yeah, McGonagall played. McGonagall played batted third versus the lefty. So yeah, that's super encouraging there. But you know, I think teams also don't want to have too many platoons. I know that McGonagall and Green is in there, are in there versus lefties, and they also had a lefty sick today. I forget who else, or righty sick, who normally plays versus lefties. I forget who it was for the Tigers, but you know, that said, like, maybe he'll get a few starts here and there versus righties, but or versus lefties. But under the hood, like, all of these things look good for Colt Keith, and he's like, and I know we've talked about him on shows before, but it looks like he's making steady progress and just improving in all of those areas, from plate discipline to hard hit, and coming into his own sort of as someone that was a pretty good big prospect. Now it looks like he's putting it all together in his age 24 season. I just think you need to tamper his expectations, because he'll be a strong side platoon player for the most part.
Yeah, it's a bummer. In 2024, he hit .305 against lefties in 82 at-bats, but last year it was a .163 batting average, and this year he's only gotten one AB. So, yeah, I think probably a deeper league or like a MI option if that's the reality. But
we talk about all of these guys that, you know, we always talk about how it takes so long for guys to platoon splits to be meaningful. I think it's like upwards of like 800 plate appearances, maybe even more. And so many of these guys just don't even get the chance. Ben Rice comes to mind. I know that's controversy in New York, and the Yankees said they were going to play him versus lefties. They've sat him versus four of the five lefties that they've seen.
And he's hitting
lefties. Yeah, and he's hitting them, like you talked about Colt Keith. I know in small samples like those, you need to take them with a grain of salt, but that also means that the negative numbers, guys that have poor numbers versus lefties, you also need to take those with a grain of salt. Like, look at what O'Neill Cruz is doing. Again, small sample. He's not going to hit that off lefties like this all year. Ellie De La Cruz, I know I'm also mentioning like the two most talented players in baseball, but it took them a while to even get this, in this short a sample size, these type of results. And yeah, maybe Colt Keith, obviously Colt Keith isn't on that level as far as raw talent. But I think that there, again, it's easy for me to say this. I just have a silly little podcast, not making managerial decisions. But I wish there would be at least some of the players that have the raw talent, like Ben Rice, even to an extent like Colt Keith, like Kerry Carpenter does. I wish there would be a little bit more run, because there has been some success in those small samples. And how else are they going to figure it out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. And it's feels like it's kind of like just a little too much of the money ball or something. Like, you want to see especially some of the younger big names get a full run before they're just kind of trapped to, like, Michael Conforto land. Yeah. Like, he got a long run, right, as an everyday player before. Yeah. It was like, oh, he's a platoon vet. All right, so last group of names here, Steve. We've talked about a couple of these names in Mark Vientos. At this stage, some of these guys have slightly higher swinging strike rates, but it's not to the point where you wouldn't take the trade-off for increased bat speed. And Vientos is on this list. I know he's gotten a little bit cold, but doing some interesting things early on. Cam Smith, you could say the same. Again, after we mentioned him the other day on the show, he rattled off like three homers in the next five games, but he's gotten a little cold as well. Still just think overall those guys, like, be on notice. I know Vientos, there's a little bit of the playing time battle, but Cam Smith definitely one to watch and try to ride the wave when those hot streaks do come. And then Hunter Goodman, timely. He's got two homers tonight as we record. His huge power year last season, he's followed up with adding more bat speed. So one of the higher bat speeds on the list, just behind Cam Smith and Junior Caminero. But some major pop from Hunter Goodman, and the swing strike rate has gone up a little bit, 4%. So definitely some of the blemishes that were in the profile haven't gone away, but if you knew what you signed up for, it looks like the year itself wasn't a fluke. And then Brenton Doyle was the last one, and the name we haven't talked about. So across these, Steve, Vientos, Doyle, Cam Smith, Hunter Goodman, anyone that you want to punch in on?
I think Vientos and Doyle maybe could have maybe not full bounce back seasons like they had 2 years ago, but I think they could be fantasy relevant again. I don't think they were at all last year. They definitely weren't at all last year. That's putting it nicely. But the fact that they've made gains in these two important areas this early in the season has me encouraged. Like, we've seen them demonstrate those skills. It looks like it could become to fruition again. Cam Smith, I think this is sort of another true breakout that's happening. And then Hunter Goodman, yeah, I think it's just validation. Like, you know, maybe last year is a sort of a career year for him, especially for a guy that had his track record of having a lot of swing and miss in his game. But you can get away with that. Like, you know, Cal Riley struck out a bunch and had, you know, a 60 homer year. I'm not saying that that's coming, but, you know, there is a little bit even more room for error in that strikeout department, because Coors in the summer is going to elevate his average, where, you know, a guy with a 33% strikeout rate is average. You may expect him to be at 200. Goodman could be at 220 because of that, because of the Coors, even if he does have a strikeout rate above above 30%, which sounds horrible. And I know the swing strike rate and the contact rate is discouraging, but there's some soft landing there in Colorado with Goodman, as there always is, because of just the way that field plays.
Yeah, you just hold your nose with that one. I mean, it reminds me of some of the catchers of old. Who's the guy I'm thinking of that was like 220 and would get 40 homers? It's going to come to me as soon as we stop Napoli? Recording. But not Napoli, but he's a good one. Evan Gattis is a good Evan one. Gattis. It's a little more recent than those guys. But, yeah, just wait, Steve. I'll text you in the middle of the night and be like, oh, this is that slugger. I think it might have been a Mariner, but maybe I got Cal Raleigh in my head. All right, so those are the names. That's the list. I think some really interesting, like, buy low candidates, and some probably four or five that were on the wire, but very cool to check these and watch them before some of the other more easily referenced numbers become like statistically dependable or reliable. But I think that's a tease. A couple of weeks from now, we'll definitely, yeah, when most players have that 50 batted balls in play, we'll look at, you know, the barrel rates and things of that nature to see, are we buying it? Is it real? But until then, great, great list, Steve. Thanks for throwing the sheet together. And for everybody who tuned in, thank you guys for joining us. We will be back next week, but for episode 210, thanks for talking baseball with us.
Thanks, guys. Later.